The county's number one talk show, the 9 till noon show on Highland Radio.
And very good morning to you. This is the 9 till noon show on Highland Radio. It's Donal Kavanagh with you until 12 noon today. A busy show lined up as always, but as we always say, the most important part of this programme is your views, your perspectives and your take on the issues of the day. So please do get in touch. Tell us what you want to talk about. You can do so via text and WhatsApp on 086 60 25000. You can call us on 074 91 25000. It's 0035 374 91 25000 if you're outside of the dialing area. We're all over social media, of course. You can get us at Highland Hub on Facebook. We're at Highland Radio on X. We're on Snapchat, Instagram, comments at Highland Radio on email. And you can, of course, watch the show unfold on our Facebook pages, Highland Radio and Highland Radio News and Sport. You can also watch the station on our YouTube channel, Highland Radio Ireland, which was extremely busy over the weekend and over the past number of days as election counts came to a conclusion. And the Highland Radio channel is open and we're broadcasting live there, so you can see the show unfold. You can see our Zoom guests as they speak. You can see our studio guests as they speak as well. The downside, of course, is that you have to look at me. But it's a price worth paying, I think, for what is a new and innovative service here on Highland Radio. Let's look at the papers. Finn Valley Voice this morning. Lovely picture on the front of Father Anthony Hartnett being congratulated by the Bishop of Down and Connor, Alan McCuckian, after his ordination in St. Eunan's Cathedral on Sunday. And I think it's nice that Bishop McCuckian came back from his new gig in Belfast to preside over that ordination, because he would have been monitoring Father Hartnett over the course of his studies in seminary, his ordination to diaconate and so on. So it's good that Bishop McGuckian did come to actually carry out that ordination ceremony. The main story on the Finn Valley Voice, Glenfinnan's Martin Scanlon tops poll. Two new faces on Donegal County Council, the other one from the Finn Valley, of course, being Dakota Nick Venman of Sinn Féin. Ansley Midlin writes, bonfires and cheering supporters led Glenfinnan Martin Scanlon, independent, home on Sunday night after he topped the poll to be elected on the fifth count in the Lifford Stranorer electoral area. He surpassed the quota with a final vote count of 1,732. And I had the pleasure of covering the Lifford Stranorer electoral area myself over the weekend, and I got to speak to him just after he was elected, and a lovely gentleman, and I have no doubt he'll be a very interesting and vocal councillor in the chamber as well. Irish Independent this morning. Coalition infighting flares as two MEPs lose their seats. The outgoing Green MEP Ciarán Cuff lost his seat, as did the outgoing MEP Claire Daly. And Eamon Ryan, the Green leader, confronted the Taoiseach an Tánaiste at their weekly meeting. We're told he took issue with claims that his party is autocratic, insisting that coalition partners should not be attacking each other for electoral gain. And indeed, it was made clear, I don't know if you ever listened to the Pat the Power podcast, Ivan Yates and Matt Cooper, and Ivan Yates actually appeared in this programme with Greg some time ago when that podcast was launched. And I mean, effectively, Ivan Yates is saying that what the two main parties, Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael, in that coalition need to do now is start attacking the Greens, because they're going to need a scapegoat before a general election. And from what Eamon Ryan is saying, he believes that's already started. Interesting, on RTE last night as well, Claire Daly gave them very short shrift when they came and asked for an interview after it became clear her seat was gone. Her response to them was, "You'd no interest in talking to me over the past 5 years. Why would you want to talk to me now?" And she pretty much just walked away. And that was her attitude, but Claire Daly gone. Her closest ally in the European Parliament, and indeed in the Dáil before that, would traditionally have been Mick Wallace. Mick Wallace is still fighting for a seat in Ireland South, but he is in a bit of an uncomfortable position at the moment as the count draws. Well, I say draws to a close. I mean, draws, if you're within a day and a half in Europe, you're drawing to a close at this stage. But Ireland South, Mick Wallace is still in there fighting, but by no means guaranteed yet. Interesting battle continuing in Midlands Northwest, and we're going to be going to that battle very shortly on the programme just to discuss it a little bit more. But certainly Sinn Féin's Michelle Gildernew saying last night that she sees it very unlikely that she will be able to take a seat. Chris McManus, it would seem the outgoing Sinn Féin MEP, is out of the running at this stage. And Kieran Mullooly looks set to take the fifth seat, with Barry Cowan, Luke Ming Flanagan, Nina Carberry and Maria Walsh set to take the other seats. But we did hear Nicholas Crossan on the programme yesterday saying he believes that we could see a situation where Maria Walsh is overtaken by Michelle Gildernew. We'll be discussing that, as I say, a little bit later on in the programme. Irish Times this morning: main parties take European seats in Dublin as Greens lose out. Andrews, Doherty, Lynn Boylan and O'Riordan elected as MEPs in Dublin. And in Limerick, John Moran becomes the state first directly elected mayor. And the council continuing, we are told, in South and Midlands North West. We'll have more on that. So, Éadan O'Riordan elected to the Dáil. In Ireland South, Michael McNamara, the Clare MEP, the Clare TD at the moment, looks set to be elected to the Dáil. Now, in both those cases, they are opposition TDs, look set to be elected to Europe. Barry Cowan in Midlands North West is a different story. He is a government TD, so the government looks like they'll be down at least one TD in the event of Barry Cowan's election to Europe, as now seems very likely. So we'll have to see what happens with regards to by-elections and election dates and so on. Irish Daily Mail, similar to the Times headline: it's a washout for the Greens, crushing results for Eamon Ryan's party as Ciarán Cuff loses Euro seat, local election losses mount and independent Ireland prosper. Now Grace O'Sullivan, the other Green MEP, is in grave danger in South Ireland South, and she could well be losing her seat there as well. Rural TD Richard O'Donoghue of Independent Ireland says, "We now have as many councillors as the Green Party. We are growing. We have more independent councillors joining us." And the other story on the front of the Irish Daily Mail, by the way, anyone that takes an interest in international news will have been following this one: guilty. Joe Biden says he will stand by his son as he faces 25 years in jail. Joe Biden was convicted on all counts on charges that he lied about drug use when he went to buy a gun. And there are apparently more charges, and potentially more serious charges, against Hunter Biden, the son of the sitting president, which he is set to face over the coming months. Moving on to the Red Tops, the front of the Irish Daily Star this morning: pout for the count. Huffy Daly won't talk to RTE as she and DJ Niall Boylan lose out on MEP seat. Nothing to declare is the main story, and a picture of Claire Daly walking past the RTE reporter as she came to terms with the loss of her seat. The quote was, "You've had no interest in talking to me for 5 years, so I've no interest in talking to you now." And she fled the count centre, we're told, within minutes of being eliminated from a tight race, which also saw Niall Boylan fail to be elected. And he was being tipped as a potential MEP. Irish Daily Mirror again: bad night for Daly. Ron the Double, a picture of Ronaldo celebrating scoring as Portugal beat Ireland 3-0 in a friendly last night. Also, a worrying quote from the chief of the GAA: Casement Park won't be ready in time for Euros games. And we go to the back, and comment from Jarlath Burns. The story by Pat Nolan says GAA President Jarlath Burns has poured cold water on the prospect of Euro 2028 games being staged in Belfast. Casement Park is to host 5 games in the tournament, but ongoing delays to its redevelopment have led Burns to conclude that the UEFA deadline will not be met. When asked if he felt the chances of the Euros coming to Belfast had passed, Burns replied, "I do. I'm now pessimistic about the chances of the Euros being played at Casement Park." Irish Sun this morning. The main headline, by the way, on the Mirror is "Killer Dog Ban." A very similar story on the front of the Irish Sun: government acts on beasts, ban XL devil dogs, killer breed to be outlawed under new law. The government is planning to outlaw aggressive XL bully dogs. The Attorney General is examining how a law will work. It comes after Nicole Morley, 23, was mauled to death by her dogs last week. Minister Heather Humphreys said no dog's life is worth more than human life. And we knew from Minister Humphreys at the time, a week ago, that this was an issue that was under discussion anyway. And an expert group had already been set up under the chairmanship of a former Garda commissioner. And it now seems as though the outcome of that process is going to be that there will be a ban on XL bully dogs, as is the case in England. Not in all parts of the UK, I believe. It's not the case in Scotland. I'm not sure about Wales and Northern Ireland, to be honest. I must double check up on that. But certainly XL bullies have been banned in England. Right, that's how your papers are looking this morning. Again, a reminder that if you want to contact us on the programme, you can do so. You can give us a call on 074-9125000. Shannon taking your calls along with Caroline, who's producing the show as well, as always. You can text or WhatsApp 086-6025000 or email comments at highlandradio.com. Going to take a short break. Back after these. You're very welcome back to the 9 till noon show on Highland Radio. We are with you, as the name suggests, until 12 noon today. Very shortly, we're going to be discussing the situation with regards to the European election. We know that at present in Midlands Northwest, the situation is that Luke McFlanagan is topping the poll. He seems set to take a seat. Barry Cowan, very strong as well. He looks set to take a seat. Fine Gael doing very well between Nina Carberry and sitting MEP Maria Walsh. They have 145,000 first preference votes between them, and they both do look set that there will be two Fine Gael MEPs returned, as was the case before the election. Now, Sinn Féin are arguing that they believe there'll be a strong transfer between their two candidates, Michelle Galdrinieu and Chris McManus, and they're not ruling out Chris McManus actually taking the seat. Now, Chris McManus had been substantially behind Michelle Galdrinieu. Ireland South, they do believe there is a good chance they can take a seat there. Kathleen Function doing very well down in Ireland South as well. A ding-dong battle continuing there, and that's going to be an interesting one to watch unfold. We hope very shortly to be speaking to Deputy Padraig McLaughlin, and indeed, I do believe at this point we can go to line one and say, Deputy Padraig McLaughlin, good morning.
Good morning, Donald. How's it going?
Not bad at all. Now, Padraig, the situation in Midlands Northwest is on a knife edge, and yesterday evening, very few people were giving Sinn Féin a chance in the constituency, including, it seems, Michelle Galdrinieu. You believe there is still a chance that Chris McManus isn't necessarily completely out of the question?
Yeah, there's a Luke McFlanagan had tweeted yesterday that there was a chance, and Dara Cleary of Fianna Fáil hasn't ruled it out. That's the position that we would hold too. We think that it's going to be a very, very close battle with Kieran Mullooly for that last seat. Kieran Mullooly, of course, is the Independent Ireland candidate, and he used to be a RT correspondent in the Midlands, so he'd be a big name. So that's the scenario there. As you know, Lynn Boylan won a seat in Dublin for us last night, and Kathleen Function is very much in the running for a seat there in Ireland South. So that will be decided in the next 24 hours, I would imagine. So we're just going to keep watching the situation in Castlebar, and obviously we're hoping that Michelle Galdrinieu can be elected for Sinn Féin.
So you believe that Michelle Galdrinieu is the one that stands the chance of election? I heard some suggestion that Chris McManus might be able to take the seat. It seemed, certainly based on the figures we had yesterday, that Chris McManus was going to be too far behind to make up the ground. But you believe the transfer from Chris McManus to Michelle Galdrinieu can make that difference?
Yeah, it's going to be very tight. I mean, that was the assessment. Looking throughout yesterday, that whoever gets elected, and we think it's a battle between Michelle Galdrinieu and Kieran Mullooly for the last seat. Whoever makes it, it's going to be very, very tight. So no, we wouldn't be we wouldn't be saying that we're defeated there now at all. We still think there's a chance, and a very good chance in Ireland South. So you know, we could end up with two or three MEPs at the end of this.
It is disappointing from the party's point of view, especially given that not that long ago, Midlands Northwest was being spoken about by Sinn Féin as a constituency where two European seats were possible.
Yeah, I think, you know, there's always an analysis, you know, after split, like in football, you can get a proper picture after the game, and the votes are counted in this case. And I suppose if you take the last time, you know, you had Maria Walsh, who was, you know, obviously the Rose of Tralee, a big household name, was elected for Fine Gael. This time they've added Nina Carberry. So the sitting MEP didn't seek re-election for Fine Gael. They replaced him with Nina Carberry, of course, who would be a household name. And then you have Kieran Mullooly, who I've mentioned earlier, you know, who was the RTE correspondent for many, many years, you know, a very, very famous name, particularly in that Midlands region. And of course, Luke McFlanagan, you know, who I suppose would fish in the same swim in the same political water as Sinn Féin. So, you know, when you look back, it was a tough challenge for us. And, you know, European elections are all about voter recognition. Yeah. So for us, it's been a tough one. And, you know, we're still hoping we can take that last seat.
Obviously, Michelle Gildernew will be known by people who watch Northern Ireland politics, former agriculture minister, former MLA in Fermanagh South Tyrone. And from that point of view, she is going to have a profile in this part of the world. The question is, once you get down toward the southern part of the constituency, that name recognition is going to fall away. As you say, Ciarán Mullooly does have that name recognition, and Ciarán Mullooly is proving to be, from all the tallies, very transfer friendly. And really, that could be down to that battle. I mean, can Michelle Gildernew get the same level of transfer as Ciarán Mullooly does, even from candidates swimming in, as you said yourself, the same particular waters?
Yeah, and that's the challenge. You know, when you're up against a name that people know, that they've heard on their TV screens for many years, you know, that's a tough one. And it is true that, you know, our two candidates wouldn't just have that same voter recognition in large parts of the constituency. And obviously, the Independent Ireland party, the Fine Gael party, you know, have gone for celebrity names, and it may well work for them. And that's just the toughness of European elections. Whether you're, you know, in the case of, you know, in places like Ireland South, Dublin, you also have, you know, we have celebrity names in there too. Some of them will succeed, some of them won't. So, you know, it's a tough challenge, European elections. And I suppose looking at the local elections, you know, the reflection for us is that, you know, we had 81 seats when we came in. So we had a very disappointing election in 2019. We're sitting now at about 102, 103. So we've gained about 25%. And Donegal, I was, you know, obviously disappointed for the candidates who weren't elected, but I was very happy to re-elect our 10 councillors. We're now the joint largest party, on council. In my own home area of South Inishowen, like we had a fantastic, vote turnout for us. So, you know, it's sort of ups and downs for us across the country. You know, to be quite honest, and I said this yesterday, it was on RT Radio, you know, we're disappointed that we didn't hit the standards that we set for ourselves, but we need to get over that now. People listening today in Donegal, you know, and I know it, I've been in so many doors over the recent months, people are not happy with this government. They're not happy with the housing crisis, 100% redress, not happy with the health crisis. So I don't believe that they want another 5 years of Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael.
The big worry, though, from your point of view, has got to be, up until quite recently, for people that were not happy with this government, the only alternative was Sinn Féin. Basically, Mary Lou was the Taoiseach in waiting. Sinn Féin were the alternative. You've now got groupings like Independent Ireland who are saying, excuse us, we're getting bigger, we're getting bigger, we're getting bigger. And perhaps there is another alternative, and people are starting to look toward that alternative. And that's leaving you to a certain extent on sidelines that you wouldn't have been on 6 months ago.
Yeah, and you know something, I mean, that's a challenge for us. I mean, certainly, a lot of people who voted in the general election in 2020 for Sinn Féin didn't vote for us in the European elections. I understand in the local elections. I mean, if you go around Donegal, you know, you would see Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael councillors. And, you know, the bulk of them are very, very good councillors. And, like, I would know for a fact that there are people who will vote for their local Fianna Fáil councillor in Donegal, but they'll be voting for Sinn Féin in the general election. So our challenge is to shape up what is the alternative government going to look like? What will we do around housing? You know, for example, in Donegal, there's absolutely no plan to build affordable housing for young families in public land. No plan whatsoever. We have a plan around that. But for our health service, we know the crisis in Letterkenny Hospital. Yeah. We have a plan around how you change that around. So we need to win those hearts and minds. And we're humble enough to say in this election, Donal, in this local and European election, we didn't hit the targets we wanted, but we also need to, you know, dust ourselves down, get match fit. This general election now is coming. And I want to say this too. In recent days, I have been taken aback, frankly, by the arrogance of the leaders of Fine Gael and Fianna Fáil, and basically saying that they're going to get another 5 years in government, that the people are happy out there, they've spoken. Let them not confuse the popularity of their local councillors on the ground with the government. As I've said, I know for a fact there are large numbers of people who voted Fianna Fáil councillors or Fine Gael in this election who are voting for us when it comes to the general election.
The Sinn Féin strategy, as I read it leading up to the election, and I say this as a voter who is driving around looking at posters and listening to debates. Okay, obviously I have something of a an inside view working as I do in journalism. But my perception was of the Sinn Féin strategy that what you were trying to do was draw a very clear link between the local election and the general election. Even the slogan, change starts here. You were effectively saying, we are working toward being in government. We start locally in the county council. There were pictures all over Letterkenny of yourself and Jerry McMonagall, or yourself and Eula Cuse, or yourself and Sandra Haughey. It was replicated elsewhere, I'm sure, in the further west you went. It was pictures of Pearce and the local candidates there. And effectively what you were saying was better housing, better health services, change starts here. You were saying to people, vote Sinn Féin locally, and then when it comes to the general election, your local councillors will work with Sinn Féin deputies that you vote in then, and we're going to affect change at a national level. And there was an attempt to draw a distinct link between the local and the national. It caught on in Donegal, but Donegal now seems to have about 10% of Sinn Féin's councillors nationally. It may have caught on here. It doesn't seem to have caught on elsewhere.
Yeah, I think that's a fair assessment. So I do, Donal. You know, we did attempt to, because, you know, we were starting, particularly down the country, from a very low base, you know, 81 councillors. 2019, we'd lost half our seats. It was a terrible election for us down the country. Funny enough, Donal, and Donegal, actually, 2019 was a good election. Mm. We won an extra seat, and we got a very good vote for Matt Carfi in the European election, but we had a very bad day down the country. So there was an attempt to, in order to win back seats, to try to get people to think about the general election. But understandably, when you look back in the final analysis, they had strong local councillors, incumbents, people who had put in a good service for their community. And what they were thinking about was their local town, their community. They weren't thinking about the housing crisis or the health service at this moment in time. But the mistake that Fine Gael and Fianna Fáil may make, their leaders, is that if they think that the popularity of, say, a Martin McDermott up in Inishowen, or say, you know, an Anthony Molloy or a Kieran Brogan or a Paul Canning and so on, you know, or a Jimmy Cavanagh in Letterkenny, if they're mistakenly thinking that the support for those guys will translate in the general election, that's a very arrogant position to take. And I think a lot of people have been angered in recent days that they voted for their local councillor, they voted on local issues, they are not happy with this government, and I'm looking forward to the general election because I think they'll get their answer when that comes.
With regards to the timing of a general election, three things can happen. What's believed to be the most likely is the government will go in the late autumn, possibly mid-November. What could happen is Simon Harris could decide after the local elections, we're on a roll, this has gone really well, let's kick Sinn Féin while they're down, let's call it and go now in July. And the third option is that Simon Harris is a young Taoiseach, he's only in there, 62, 63 days, that Simon Harris decides to push it out and go right through to the end and hold the election in February or March of next year. Which of those do you believe will happen, and which of those would best suit Sinn Féin?
Well, the Green Party obviously haven't had a good election, and they've lost half their council seats, and I think it looks like they're going to lose their two MEP seats. So the Green Party will want to stay. I suspect Fine Gael and Fianna Fáil, if you look at their everything they've said in recent days, their leadership, there's a real arrogance, there's a hubris there, and I think that they will believe that they can win the popular vote. I am very, very confident that when we have this election, and I suspect it's going to be later this year, probably in October, November, when this election takes place, I think that this government will be replaced by a new government, and I believe that Sinn Féin. And we do need to have humility. We do need to listen to those voters who are frustrated with us in this election when they voted in the European election. We have to listen to that. But I'm convinced, as we did in 2019, we can turn this around and we can give the government of change that people want. And particularly, I'm thinking of the housing crisis. I'm thinking of 100% redress in Donegal. The only pathway to genuine 100% redress is a Sinn Féin-led government. That's just the reality. So we need to get that. I mean, I'm in politics. I mean, I'm around politics a long time. The only reason I stay on is I genuinely want to see the big issues in my county resolved. I want to see housing be made affordable again. I want 100% redress for our families, proper 100% redress. And I want our hospital to be a Model 4 hospital. We are being utterly neglected. The stories I heard of what's going on in that emergency department I knew, but I just heard more and more and more stories. It is appalling. The standard of what we're left with, because we don't have enough nurses, doctors in bed. So that's why I stay in politics. That's why I'm determined that we will have a new government after the next election. I do believe we can win that if we take the lessons in this election, work hard, be humble, and work with our people to get that change.
There's a caller asking if Sinn Féin are paying the price for some of the decisions that they've taken. For instance, a caller says that Sinn Féin councillors and others in Donegal County Council voted against houses in Buncrana, and are things like that coming back to bite them?
Well, that's just nonsense. Like, I have, you know, it's my hometown. The issue there was the access road. We had agreed, the council, for many, many years on the inner relief road. That inner relief road, so that's Lincoln from the Cock Hill area into the Cassie Road. It's a really essential piece of infrastructure. It's never been delivered. So all that was asked for is that you would link those new houses and build more houses onto that new road. So there was no objection to houses. It was how you would access those houses. So, and look at the votes in Buncrana. Like Jack Murray, Terry Cross and Niamh McGuinness, they got over 40% of the vote. Absolutely massive mandate. So that speaks for itself in Buncrana. Like across Donegal, I am very proud that we didn't lose a seat, and our candidates who weren't elected got a great vote. So, you know, I'm really proud of our team. I think the people of Donegal are with us. But now we need to push on to the general election, and that's the big one. That's the one that really, really matters to people. And I know that there's people who are in a bit of despair right now. They're thinking, are we going to change this government? Will Sinn Féin be able to do it? I can tell you, I am more determined than ever after this election that we will have a change of government. We desperately need it.
One of the big stories in Donegal over the past number of days has been the success of 100% redress. Of five candidates, four elected, and the fifth was in there very, very close to the end. And of course, Nick Venman took that final seat in Lifford Stranooler, but it was a very, very uncomfortable day for the party, and no one was taking anything for granted that day. And I was there, I could see that. From their point of view, is this success of 100% redress, is this a flash in the pan, or is this going to provide a very, very credible threat to everybody else in the forthcoming general election?
Yeah, I think that, you know, to me, when obviously the leaders of the campaign, you know, Mike Action Group, the Redress Focus Group, Paddy Diver, Michael Doherty, made that call to people to put 100% redress councillors onto Donegal County Council, and it was very successful. And I think it's a welcome development in that you now have, you know, the campaigners, the affected homeowners on the council, making the case for better resources, fighting with central government to have alternative accommodation. But most importantly, we need to have a 100% redress scheme. But the only way that happens is with a government that can deliver it. And in Sinn Féin, I mean, obviously, we're a 100% redress party too. And you could see, like in the Shone Peninsula, for example, the majority of councillors now will be Sinn Féin and 100% redress. That means a majority of councillors who are in political parties that are committed to 100% redress. I think that's going to make a big difference. Similarly across Donegal. So I think it's a welcome development. I look forward to working with them, both locally and nationally, because it's clear now that this scheme is not working. Those who said it was a good scheme have been proved utterly wrong. People are short by between, you know, 50 to 150,000. How the hell are they going to get that? If you're an older person, you're not going to get a loan to get that. If you're somebody with limited resources, you know. So it is a cruel scenario that we have. And I am determined, you know, this is the basic commitment in my political life, is to get to the place where we have Sinn Féin in government, working with the campaigners in Donegal with a 100% redress scheme for everybody, and that's where we want to get to.
But from the point of view of getting Sinn Féin into government, I mean, it does seem there is some way to go, and the party does have rebuilding work to do. Deputy Patrick McLaughlin, thank you very much indeed for speaking to us this morning, and we'll be tracking that progress and tracking the pre-election campaign and the election campaign as it revs up over the coming months with interest. It'll be a quiet enough summer, but one suspects as soon as we get into August, September, and the pre-Dáil convention and meetings, an election campaign is going to start in September, whether it's called or not.
No, absolutely. I'm ready. My party are ready. Obviously, we'll do our review. You should review. I mean, after every election, you have a review. But we have some lessons to learn. As I say, we have gained 25% more seats. In places like Donegal, we've done well. In places like Monaghan, Offaly, you know, Waterford, Kerry, you know, there's lots of places where people are happy with the election, but yes, there's lots of places where we should have done better. So listen, be humble. That's the one thing about being a public representative. You're a servant of the people. They speak every 4 or 5 years. Take the lessons, whether you win or lose, take the lessons and move on. And the, but more important than Sinn Féin's fortunes is that the people out there deserve a government that can tackle the real problems of housing and health. And I'm determined that they'll get that government after the next election.
Thank you very much indeed. We're back after these. This is the 9 till noon show on Highland Radio. A few of your comments. Sinn Féin messed up at the last referendum by agreeing with the main parties as well as promoting the Rainbow Group plus the immigrants and will jump on a popular bandwagon. I voted for them up until now. Another caller says Sinn Féin talk about the arrogance of the other two main parties. Does he hear himself? Sinn Féin's arrogance is the reason for the losses now. W. McLaughlin says that he is being humble. Another caller says, what are the politicians' views on immigration and open borders? Now, we're going to go to line one and we're going to speak to Maureen Murchu, who is CEO of the Irish Self-Catering Federation. There is a registration of short-term letting bill going through the system, and its implications for tourism along the Wild Atlantic Way could be immense. The ISCF have written an open letter to the government to stop unintended and serious harm being inflicted on the rural economy. Maura joins us on the line. Maura, good morning.
Good morning, Donal. How are you?
Very well indeed. Maura, what is the threat that's posed to the tourism sector? Because on the face of it, this bill seems to make sense, to register the accommodations and get everything done, get everything above board. That all seems to make sense. But you believe unintended consequences could really come into play here?
I really do, Donal. We've actually been calling for a register since 2016. We believe the register itself is an excellent idea because it identifies everybody who is working in the tourism business. And in Donegal, it would allow for expansion where more accommodation is needed. And as we know, hotels are really not viable in lots of rural areas of Donegal. But we have got a report from Fáil to Ireland from 2022 where they're planning to close down 636 self-catering units in Donegal. Now, what's that going to do to the tourism offering in Donegal? It's going to decimate it. And we want clarity from government that this is not going to happen. The problem for us is not the register, but it's actually associated planning legislation which needs clarity. And we've been calling for this for over 2 years from the Department of Housing, who we have to discuss planning with.
Now, you said there that Fáil to Ireland is planning to close down over 600 self-catering accommodations in Donegal. Are you saying they are actively planning to shut down existing businesses, or are you saying that they may be forced to do so in the future if planning elements of this registration process are fully adopted?
They may be forced to do so if the certain planning parts are adopted. Now, planning should not have anything to do with the register. At EU level, there is no requirement for planning. But the document that I'm looking at is the estimates of short-term tourism let properties which may be suitable for long-term rental. And that's where I'm getting the figure from. And that's a document from 22.
Yeah.
And that is what has got us really, really worried.
Is that a green paper, a strategy document? What is the status of that document you're looking at? Because in the final analysis,
it's an analysis, and it was done for the Oireachtas Tourism Committee in 2022.
Yeah.
We only got it in the last month as a result of a Freedom of Information piece. So, you know, when we saw those documents, we could suddenly see where Catherine Martin was getting her figures of closing down, it may close down 10,700 self-catering units around the country. But over 60% of those are in the Wild Atlantic Way region. They're not in central Dublin where the big tourism, where the big accommodation issue is.
Yeah.
And they're going to close down. They're not looking at self-catering as bringing money into the area. The value of it from an economic point of view, the value to the restaurants, the pubs, the visitor attractions, the activity providers, all depending on people coming into an area. And if they close the properties down, it's not just us, it's the associated businesses which will also be affected. And that is why our colleagues in tourism signed this letter with us, which we gave to the Taoiseach yesterday.
In terms of the regulation, does this require specific legislation with specific wording, or can this be done by ministerial order? Can it just be done by Minister Catherine Martin on the conditions that she chooses, or does it have to go through the Dáil with a specifically worded bill?
It's got to go through the Dáil with a specifically worded bill. So even if she announced the bill today, we would have about 3 months to debate it. And allowing for the fact that the summer recess is coming up, it won't be in place until the autumn.
And the reality is we could well be looking at a change of government in October, November. Yes. So this could, yes, it could be well into next year before this even gets onto the floor of the Dáil.
But they have only 2 years from last April to implement it under EU regulations. And with EU requirements, if you don't implement something, yeah, you get fined. So what the Europe is looking for is data. They're not looking for planning. They're not looking for anything else. In fact, Europe is very much in favour of rural tourism. They want to increase the amount of rural tourism. But what has been tacked on here is a planning legislation which will close us down.
Has it been confirmed by government that they intend including that into the wording of a bill? Because very often policy documents can emerge, green papers can emerge, white papers can emerge, and they contain all sorts of potential wordings. But when it actually comes down to the final wording as drafted, that final wording as drafted is very different. So obviously there is a window there for you to politically lobby and make sure that the final draft of that bill does not include those provisions which you believe will endanger you.
Exactly, exactly. So we were advised last week by an article in the paper that Dara O'Brien announced that he was bringing legislation to Cabinet yesterday to deal with the planning. And then yesterday morning they changed their minds. They got the letter from us and they have now changed their minds, and Dara O'Brien wants to talk to us before he brings planning legislation in front of the Cabinet. So we think that is a positive thing that's come out of getting this letter. And I'm actually leaving you in a few minutes, and I'm going to be meeting Catherine Martin at the Tourism Hospitality Forum, and we will be discussing what her timeline for the register is going to be and how she is going to support the industry, you know, and make sure that we don't lose 10,700 properties across the country, or in Donegal, more importantly, 636.
In terms of the planning legislation that they're looking at putting in, obviously that's an effort to ensure that there are minimum standards. I'm sure you, as providers of self-catering accommodation, will want to include those minimum standards. Do you believe there is potentially a compromise there whereby the government would say, right, well, we would expect minimum standards to be applied and we'll give you a certain amount of time to actually do it? Because I'm sure into the future you want to ensure that the accommodation you're providing to your guests and to your clients is as good as is possible. And in terms of those planning regulations, presumably the reason anyone, be it Fáilte Ireland or be it government, whoever, the reason any of them are looking at imposing planning regulations is to ensure that the accommodation being provided is as safe and as adequately, and as, adequate is the wrong word, it's as safe and it's, you know, as good as possible to be presented,
yes,
to guests.
Yes. Well, the good thing is that we already have a quality assurance system within the Irish Self-Catering Federation, and all our members adhere to that. Fáilte Ireland has a quality assurance system as well, but we have over 6,500 members, which is a lot more than Fáilte Ireland has within their system. So all our members are already quality assured. They meet the safety standards, insurance, all that sort of thing.
Is that then potentially the compromise? Is the potential compromise then that the bill states that all accommodations must meet the requirements of that quality assurance scheme? If that were in the bill, would that be acceptable?
I think it would. But it would also, they would also want to give permission for those who are already in the industry to continue. Well, you can call that a derogation, you can call it the grandfather rule, but whatever you call it, you need to allow businesses that are already trading for many years to continue. And we also need, in a bill, to allow new businesses to be able to open. So we need clear planning guidelines for people who want to set up self-catering, if they want to diversify their family farm buildings and change what they're doing, if they want to set up glamping. They need clear guidelines, because people are applying for businesses and being turned down right, left and centre. And we don't agree with people opening up, so particularly things like glamping, without planning permission. It's very expensive to set up. You,
yeah,
want to make sure that you're entitled to do it. So we need a sensible policy direction for self-catering as part of a broader tourism policy. So there is a national tourism policy, which is long overdue, The last one came out from Michael Ring in 2015. Mm-hmm. There hasn't been one since. There's a new policy, government policy on tourism due. Whether we see it before the next election, I don't know. But we want a clear plan as to where they want to go and how they can support small family businesses all over rural Ireland.
Maura, you did tell us that you are going to a meeting very shortly with Catherine Martin, and you know, maybe there's no maybe about it. I'm sure these issues are going to be discussed and discussed comprehensively. Thank you very much indeed for speaking to us this morning. It's an interesting situation. I mean, I think ultimately everyone wants the same thing. Everyone wants to bring in tourism and to present those incoming tourists with the best possible facilities and accommodations and experience that they can possibly have. And I mean, if you and government can work together to achieve that, I'm sure a compromise can be found here. And maybe, as we said, maybe adherence to that quality assurance scheme could be the way to go. In the meantime, Maura, we'll watch this one with interest. And thank you very much indeed for speaking to us this morning. Caller says, morning, I have a question. My son finished his junior cert. He is 15 years old and was looking for some light summer work. I don't know if this is a legal age or if a 15-year-old can work during the summer. Any help on this topic would be appreciated. Now, the caller says, the world is an unfair place. There are those who enjoy infinite privileges and those who are condemned to the most miserable living conditions. None of this has to do with merit, ability or effort. It's just the gap between rich and poor. Thank goodness that every now and again, someone in their own small way does an act of good. I want to say good morning to everyone who's listening to us and watching us on our online service. Anne-Marie and Annie, a very good morning to you. Comment in from Darren. Darren says they don't need planning permission for modular homes for refugees. People need to wake up and take our rights and our country back. Second-class citizens, we are in our own country. Just a few more comments. Just want to mention that I pulled in on Sunday evening to the Finn Valley Centre. To my surprise, there was a car in a disabled bay with no badge. I had to double park, get my sister out of the wheelchair and had to leave her unattended. So I parked outside the car park. Shocking. I have made contact with the person in question. Another caller says, bring our existing hotels back into play in Donegal and stop using them as refugee centres. We would have plenty of beds for tourism where tourists could come and stay at a reasonable price. Tourism is devastated here for another season. Caller says, tell Padraig we are sick of the flip-flopping. Sinn Féin stand for nothing. They're all for open borders. They're not fully supporting the redress campaign. Yet all these people are flocking into our wee country, jamming up the health and housing. Can't get a doctor or a dental appointment. Sinn Féin need to listen to the people right now because at the moment they are no better than Fianna Fáil or Fine Gael. That's the perspective of one listener. Another caller says, until Sinn Féin get rid of Mary Lou, they are finished. Does Pádraig not know this? Another caller says, I think all the parties are underestimating the immigration situation as it relates to tourism, health and housing, and that is proving a problem, so says a listener. Now, just before we go to a break and to the news with Donna Marie, just want to tell you that there is a monster bingo in the Inishowen Gateway Hotel on Wednesday the 12th of June, which is this evening. Doors open at 7:30. Bingo starts at 8:30. €3,000 worth of prizes, including a top bingo prize of €1,000. There is also a raffle with lots of prizes on the night, and that's a fundraiser for Gaelscoil Buncrana, and that comes into us from the Gaelscoil Parents Fundraising Committee there at Gaelscoil Buncrana.